Good day, Internet.
Hey, Internet. Good day.
Good day, Internet.
Hello, Internet. Good day to you.
Good day, Internet.
D. We were we were going to do something else, but I changed my mind. I think we should do Daily Tech News Show.
Oh, that's, all right. That's a little left field, Tom.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, okay. Sure.
They just spring it on us.
Just a wild idea.
I happen to see that Sarah is in a dock full of tech news.
Well, let's use that. Here we go.
Yeah. All right. What else am I
going to
do?
Three, two. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, the listener. Thanks to all of you, including Pepper Geesey, Carmine Bailey, Vince Power, and our lifetime supporter, Eklund of HockeyBuzz.com. On this episode of DTNS, Apple can let you play Windows games now, WordPress has a chatbot built in, and a robot learns to cook by watching videos. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, June 7th, 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
From a studio that's currently still messy, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Salt Lake City, I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
I thought you meant Lionel Messi at first, who's going to play in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I thought maybe people might think that Messi and I are kind of friends, and he's in my studio somewhere.
Naming rights.
And he might be.
Yeah, who's to say? Can't prove he's not.
I don't know.
No.
Yeah.
Can't prove it.
Well, while you try to figure that out, let's start with the quick hits.
Couple Apple notes to start us off. First, it was not a mistake. Apple meant to make developer betas of iOS, macOS, and watchOS available to everyone. It's part of a new free version of Apple's developer program, which also gives you access to Xcode, support materials, app testing, and more for no charge. You still have to pay if you want more advanced support and to submit apps to the app stores, however. One other thing of Apple note is for Android users. Now, Apple announced that in iOS 17, group chats with Android users will retain text editing and threaded replies and full photo quality and better video compression for iOS users. Android users won't see those edits or the better image quality, and threaded replies will work differently. But hey, iOS people won't be as mad at you as they were just several days ago.
Yeah, yeah. Just bringing up that green bubble level. Samsung's going to hold its next Unpacked event at the COEX Convention Center in the Gangnam neighborhood of Seoul, South Korea, as made famous in size Gangnam style. This is the first time that Samsung has done one of its Unpacked events from its home country. Now, they didn't give us the exact date, but they said it'll be in late July, and it will be about foldables, Samsung Gangnam style.
Autonomous trucking company TuSimple, that's T-U-Simple, has begun testing its level 4 trucks in Japan. The autonomous trucks are operating on the Tomei Expressway, which runs through Tokyo, Nagoya, and Osaka. The government hopes to open an autonomous trucking lane on the expressway by next year and allow full operation in it by 2026. Japan is facing a shortage of truck drivers.
Bodhi from the Kilowatt Podcast wanted to make sure we let y'all know about the Volvo SUV, the EX30, Volvo's all-electric SUV. It is the smallest SUV in Volvo's lineup, but also the fastest, going from 0 to 60 miles per hour in 3.4 seconds, has a 12.3-inch portrait touchscreen and a Harman Kardon soundbar that spans the entire width of the dash, right up where it meets the windshield. It runs Google's info system. It does not run Android Auto, though. It does support wireless Apple CarPlay. It can charge from 10 to 80% in less than 30 minutes, and the range starts at 213 miles with a max of 298. Starting price for the EX30 is £33,795 if you're in the UK and $34,950 in the US. It's available in Europe right now, and US and UK deliveries will start in the first quarter of 2024.
Google India head Sanjay Gupta announced that the company developed language models able to handle more than 100 Indian languages for speech and text processing. Android has around 94% of the market share in India, quite a share, where there are more than 600 million mobile users.
It's a big market. Good for Google. All right, let's talk all about right, this. What do you got? What do you got? Take it
away. Automatic, the WordPress parent company, launched an AI assistant for WordPress, which integrates easily with all Jetpack-powered sites. Jetpack users get better security and performance and growth tools for WordPress sites. If you're a WordPress.com user, you already have Jetpack, but if you're running your own domain, it's something that is an add-on. Now, when you're writing a post, now using this AI assistant, you can choose to add an AI assistant block like you would for an image or something like that. The block works like any chatbot tends to do these days. You write a prompt, it'll start generating text for you, including lists and tables. It can also change the tone of a post to things like, I'm skeptical, or I'm being humorous, or I'm feeling confident, for example. It can also create a summary and suggest titles as well. The AI assistant supports 12 languages at launch, with support for translation between those 12. After letting new Jetpack users send 20 requests as a free trial just to see if it's right for you, it's going to cost $10 per month. It's also available free to WordPress.com users for a limited time. Now, there are going to be rumblings of AI-generated content being low quality, being inaccurate, because that has been an issue. We are in early days. But, Scott, what do you think? This is Automatic, after all. They're a pretty well-received company as of late. Do you think that they can tackle this?
I do. I'm always on the hunt in these conversations we have here on DTNS and outside of it for practicality and application of AI technology, and this feels like a very practical use case. I can tell you that even just recently, I've had to summarize some things and was kind of struggling to find the right length and the right, you know, grammar to use during the length, so it was, you know, clear what I was trying to say without having to have the people read many paragraphs that I was sending them to first. And it was kind of a pain. I had to go to ChatGPT, tried that a little bit, sort of worked, sort of didn't. This idea, if it works well, I think will be helpful for a lot of people who are trying to get thoughts across when sometimes they hit a snag. It will be easy for some to jump and say, well, clearly, as Sarah stated, clearly this is a problem because it's writing everything for you. And I don't see it that way. I think this is going to act as an assistant and will end up being a practical, helpful thing for people who are trying to author content. And I like it.
Yeah, it doesn't automatically create posts. I'm sure there's a way you could make it do that because WordPress is very modifiable, but that's not how it's set up. So if you're jumping to the conclusion of like spammers and everything, yeah, spammers could already do this in lots of 100 million ways. This is not the vector for that. This is the vector for helping people create better posts. I mean, just tables alone I look at and I'm like, yeah, I could use that. If you can make a table by just saying, here, turn this into a table, that's saving me a lot of time.
Yeah, 100%. I thought the same thing. If I haven't done this recently, but let's say I was talking about, I don't know, some currency conversion rates. You know, it's like I can do that all manually and look it up and make sure I have it all right. Something like this in a table would be great. Now, am I writing posts, blog posts like that on WordPress? No, not very often. I also like to think that, you know, my particular style of writing and or humor is very specific to me, right? So I don't necessarily think that if a chatbot is going to be humorous, it's going to be in my particular style. But it doesn't hurt. It's not, it doesn't strip away my voice or somehow, you know, put me out of a, you know, a job if you think that I'm a good writer. It just kind of, it's a good starting point. And perhaps, you know, perhaps there isn't a super personal voice type of post that you have to make. It's just kind of an update to something. You know, on DTNS, you know, sometimes we're personal about stuff, various columns that we publish. And sometimes it's just sort of like a little update, you know,
yeah,
and
it's
a link
here and there. Utilitarian or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And so it's like, yeah, cool. I like it. This does not scare me. It
doesn't scare me at all. I think there's just a feeling out there that this stuff is going to trick everybody, or it's going to fool people into thinking you wrote something you didn't write. And my experience with it so far is you still have to write stuff. Like, I can go in there and say, make me a paragraph that sort of summarizes this one idea. But I don't know anybody who's making a living out of, you know, pooping out various paragraphs based on that process.
I have never been able to make it write a to my own standards sufficient Daily Tech News Show or Daily Tech Headlines post. Now it can summarize them really well. It can, so it's all in how you use it. I think that's the key. Yep. Let's talk robots. Scientists at the University of Cambridge used a publicly available neural network to generate a model that used computer vision to analyze cooking videos and then control a robot and recreate the dishes. The neural network model was able to identify objects, including fruits and vegetables. The scientists used 8 simple salad recipes using the kinds of fruits and vegetables that the model could recognize. So we've got some limits here. It can't just do anything. They had to kind of tailor it to the model they were using. Then they recorded multiple videos of them making each recipe. The model processed 16 videos and managed to identify the correct recipe 93% of the time. It recognized variations in the recipe between demonstrators and even was able to create its own new 9th recipe based on what it learned from the other 8. If you want to find out a little more about this, the paper is available on IEEE Early Access. Scott, it's a first step to a robot chef that you can show a TikTok to and it will cook what you want. What do you think?
I'm in. Here's why I'm in. First of all, I'm a terrible cook, but let's put that aside for a second. Let's say I'm actually a good cook, okay? Let's say I'm great at this, and everyone always raves about my magical recipes. The idea that I could take this TikTok video, show this model, and then have it make the food that I saw is a little bit akin to copy and paste for me, and let me explain. When I see a video like this, it's almost impossible for me to translate that. I have to remember it. I got to pause it. I got to rewind it. I got to go, no, wait, did he say add salt then? Like, there's not really a great transcript of what I've just seen. And even if there was, I'd still have to parse that. This is a little bit like how it used to be. If I wanted to move text from one place to another, I had to recreate it manually and retype it. And there would be errors and problems. Copy and paste came into our lives. And I don't remember anybody complaining about that. So to me, this is a bit like that. It's like, here's the thing. Now make the thing. And I want to see this in action. I would like to see the results of a robot trying to make something good. And it would actually make these videos far more useful to me than they currently are. Because right now, I just kind of, oh, that looks good, but I'll never make it because I'm already past it and on my way to something else. Well, why not, you know, give it to JoJo, the robot over there, and let him make it?
Yeah, and it could be useful in restaurants. We've already seen a few salad-oriented robots out there, you know, putting together meals in certain kinds of restaurants. So being able to train it up on new recipes faster by just making a video and then running it through the system. I mean, we tend to anthropomorphize these things and like it showed them the video. It really just like fed it in and the thing did frame by frame computer vision recognition, but whatever. It was you're able to make the video and then turn it into a salad recipe. Obviously a long way to go before we could make these more complicated and do things that are more than just fruits and vegetables, but this is a proof of the concept sort of study.
I think what happens is this world continues to be more, bring a physicality to it. This AI future we're looking at brings a physicality to our lives that we're used to having with digital things. And we don't even think twice about it. You know, if we want to scan a document so that I can then sign it, that's a no-brainer now. You just do that and it's done.
Yeah, yeah.
And we forget that process used to be a whole lot more involved. I think it's going to be good for our brains to start understanding that. Like 3D printing is a good example. We're going the other direction. The digital, instead of bringing everything to digital, and that's now digital, we're going, let's move some of that to our physical world. And part of that is interacting in this way. And it won't all be cooking, obviously, and it won't all be, you know, certain other applications of AI. We don't know what they all will be yet. But in this particular case, I could just see people being very happy about having less inconvenience in their lives when it comes to taking in content and then having results from it. And I think it would be a boon to content creators who are already doing real well with things like recipes and here's how I make a thing on TikTok or YouTube or whatever. This just means quicker feedback and people have the food right away. Love it.
Yeah. And instead of just being like, well, it's taking all the creativity out of making your own stuff. It's like, no, this lets me be more creative, potentially. The way that I felt like my June oven let me be more creative, potentially, because I can kind of go, all right, I'm going to give you some stuff and then you do the thing that I don't really know how to do that well. Or maybe that you just do better than I do. Great. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, let's go nuts with salads. Let's start there. It's salad spectacular. And then we can, you know, we can think about what else we want to make that might have been too daunting to try otherwise.
Now, the Whistle is saying here, and does the salad robot know to avoid toxic combinations or poisons simply because it was fed a video that claimed to use that? Yeah, don't do that. Don't show it that. Yes, it would be good if there's some safeties built into that. But we also have to take some responsibility for training it. If we create the tool that does this, we should know that whatever we teach it to make, it's going to make. So it should also make tasty things, not things that are disgusting. I think that's on us.
Yeah, we're going to have to be smarter about that stuff. And also, like all of these things, the more we think about them, the more we can think about how it's going to break or fail. I'm famous for this. I'm trying not to do this as much, especially with AI, because the first inclination is to go, it knows everything about you now, or it's going to create poison and kill you, or we jump to these conclusions so quickly. And I think that's good that humans have a little bit of that skepticism about a thing we don't know or trust yet. But a lot of that just comes with time, and the robots get smart. And they tell you, hey, don't put this salad dressing with that kind of mayonnaise. You're going to blow the house up or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And that's not the tool's fault in this particular case. Right.
Right. Right.
So,
I mean, honestly, you could do the same exact mistake if there was no AI involved.
Absolutely.
It's just you making a thing and the guy tricked you and you ate bad something. And everyone loses, you know?
See, that's the, you know what? Yeah, human error. Let's get human error out of this situation. Yeah. The robot's like, no.
That's
those
beyond
things
the
don't
scope.
Go together. Yeah.
That's beyond the mission of this. Well, folks, what do you want to hear us talk about on the show? One way to let us know is our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com.
One of the tools that Apple briefly mentioned at WWDC in their keynote announcement on Monday, is called the Game Porting Tool. Using code from the open source platform Wine to translate Windows API calls to Unix-based environments like Linux and macOS. Now, this is similar to what Valve does with its Proton tool to run Windows games on the Steam Deck. So, what do we need to know, Tom, to better understand this?
Yeah, Microsoft's Windows API for games is called DirectX. I'm going to oversimplify a lot of stuff here. So if you really know this stuff, please forgive me for leaving out a few things, but I want to make it easy for everybody to understand. Windows API for games on Windows is DirectX. Apple has its own for the graphics portion of that called Metal. So if a game developer wrote a game for Windows and wanted it to bring it to Mac OS, they'd have to change the code from referencing DirectX to referencing Metal, specifically for graphics shading. Apple's game porting tool does the translation for you automatically in real time. So it goes from Microsoft DirectX 12 into Metal 3 automatically, and also translates input audio network file and other systems calls that Metal doesn't handle. Now, there are more things that need to be tweaked if you want to port a game perfectly from Windows to Mac OS, but this tool is meant to help a developer see how the game runs with the API translation, so then they can work on fine-tuning it before they port it fully to Mac OS. But it seems to work really well. So to sum up, the game porting tool, which again, you have to be a developer and a paid developer, not one of the free developers, lets you run unmodified Windows games on Mac OS. Anybody who has the tool can do that. You don't have to know any code. If you get a developer account and you get the tool, you can be like Isaac on Twitter and run Cyberpunk 2077 at Ultra on an M1 MacBook Pro with 16 gigabytes of RAM. Or there's a Reddit post showing someone running Diablo 4 on a Mac. Scott, are these novelties or is this a game changer?
Well, to those of us who have recently, at least me anyway, in the last year or so, have been steeped in how Proton works and why the Steam Deck has done what it's done. Proton, of course, you know, Valve has been working on that for years. It's not just a Steam Deck product, but it's acted as this layer so that you can run in this Linux environment, you can run Windows-based games and run them really well. And even that, which is open to the public, is not 100% there for every single game you may try to load up into that thing. So it's got its own, you know, tweaks and issues and other stuff, and people strive to better match what it needs so the game runs well on there. But having been steeped in all of that, I always go back to like, well, my Mac is so capable, especially these Silicon Macs. And I'm just always annoyed that Apple hasn't taken the idea more seriously, that they could create a translation layer. Yes, Wine exists. Yes, other stuff like Parallels crossover. And other things. And they're not great. They're okay for business stuff and, you know, work environments, but they're terrible for games, or at least traditionally.
Well, Crossover bad. Just did a DirectX 12. In effect, they're trying to be nice about it and say, good job, Apple, for doing the thing we just announced. And
doing the stuff we're doing.
We use Wine, so you're kind of using our code there, but okay.
Yeah. In a way, Apple's finally doing a thing everyone's been begging them for natively, but didn't make a big deal out of it. And of course, like you said, not everybody has access to it unless you're a paid developer. So there's a lot of hitches to this right now, but it's exciting because I swear every day I have Mac gamers come to me and go, I listen to your show. I'd love to be playing Diablo 4. I loved 3. I played it on my Mac. I can't play 4 on the Mac. I can't play Overwatch. I can't play these very specific games. And they're always like, why? And I'm like, well, obviously they don't see the value in it in terms of monetary when it comes to Blizzard or other companies. There's a lot of reasons that, you know, you can only play certain games on the Mac store, this sort of thing. This changes that potentially in a very meaningful and sort of at the root cause way. So I personally, this got me really excited when I heard about it, because it means I might be able to point people to something soon, whoever it may come from. Either it's going to be Crossover, it's going to be, you know, Apple directly, but somebody's going to make a way that we can have a true quality translation layer, at least on Silicon Macs, that will give you that AAA experience. And we haven't been able to say that maybe in a 20 years, 30 years since like really early Mac games. So for me as a Mac user and a PC user and a gamer in general, I think this is really great news across the board.
Now the P squared has the question, how well is this going to run the games? Because again, this is meant for developers to be able to, you know, get a jump start on porting. That's why Apple didn't release it to everyone the way Valve released it on Steam Deck. They don't want you to use this to just run your own games. They want developers to use this to speed up the process of porting the game over and make it easier to translate those API calls and then just work on the fixes to make it run really well. And native games are always going to run really well than emulated or ported games that are doing these direct translations.
Sure.
But it does look like, and again, we've only had this thing for a day. It does look like this tool does a pretty darn good job.
It does. And one of the things I remember about Proton and Steam Decks is you can get away with a lot of having it look really good without killing the hardware because you're on a 7-inch screen, right? You HDMI that up to your 4K TV, you're going to have different results. The Steam Deck isn't going to give you state-of-the-art 4K graphics out of that device. But it does a really good job on that small end. So you say, well, what does that mean for a larger screen Mac environment? And my guess is you are gonna at least in these earlier stages, you're gonna have some trouble with not being able to do certain things at maximum. Some games just aren't gonna be optimized for it, and it's just not gonna work in that environment. Because at the end of the day, like you just said, this is a translation layer. This is it's an emulator, is what it is, and a good one, and a really powerful one, and so is Proton, but they're not perfect, and it would be better if it was all native. But gaming and Macs have not always been the best of friends. So I don't know that you're ever going to get that kind of native support that we're asking for across the board that we already have on Windows. But I think we can get closer. So I'm all for this. And I hope the reaction is such that Apple sees the reaction and goes, oh, maybe we're onto a cool thing here that we ought to make it a big deal in our next or second to next, or, you know, whenever they do their next iOS a Mac OS release.
And if you're already a developer or you're willing to pay $99 a year just to get this tool, well, you know, that's something you can use to run some Windows games.
Sure.
See how it works.
Well, California-based startup Equatic, like aquatic but with an E, is working to combat climate change by taking carbon dioxide out of the ocean and also the air, while creating hydrogen as an alternative fuel. In a deal with Boeing, Boeing plans to buy 2,100 metric tons of hydrogen from Equatic that it can then use in sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF, plus 62,000 metric tons worth of carbon removal to offset some of its own climate pollution. All right, so if you're saying, what is happening here exactly? Hydrogen is an alternative to oil and gas. It's being pushed by certain governments to be more climate friendly. Equatic is a relatively new company that just came out of stealth. It spun out of a research initiative that started at UCLA down in Southern California. Already has two small pilot plants, both in Los Angeles and one in Singapore, that run electric currents through the ocean water. Then, by doing that, you can split water molecules, separating hydrogen for aquatic to then sell as fuel. Now, you might say, okay, well, isn't it expensive to do this? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. For aquatic to scale up, it's going to need to bring the price way down in order for this to be actually something that is helping climate change, not contributing to it in some other way. Aquatic says it's aiming for $100 per ton by 2028. So there's a lot of research yet to do here, but it's promising stuff.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. It seems like $100 for a ton doesn't seem so bad until you realize how little a ton of that is, yeah, right?
Water is heavy.
Yeah.
I also know some objections people are probably thinking of is if it takes more carbon emitting power to operate this plant than it removes carbon, then it's not helpful. And there's a lot of questions about how these things are going to be powered. They're not necessarily powered by solar or wind even. So maybe they could be powered by the hydrogen, but then you better be making more hydrogen than you're using to power it. So those are all fair questions to have. And there's some question about the water that it puts out after it does the electrolysis. Now Aquatic says that water will not in any way harm wildlife. The temperature is going to be brought back to normal. But that's something mm-hmm. to check, make sure that they're not harming the environment in which they operate. Yeah.
Yeah. Important parameters.
All right. Let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. Dewey wrote in, Dewey in Port Angeles, Washington, who said, I liked your composting combo yesterday, and I've tried multiple times to get one going with marginal success until I heard about the Vitamix FC50. I think FC stands for food cycler. It's a bit of an investment up front, but it works fantastically. In a couple of hours, it turns your kitchen scraps into dry compost. We use ours almost daily, and I recommend getting a second bucket so you can have one to gather kitchen scraps while the other is in process. That way, you can also put the composter somewhere else if you don't want to give up that kitchen counter space, which I know, I mean, at least for me, has always been a barrier to entry with a lot of this stuff. Just a note that this might sound familiar to you. And yeah, we talked about the mill service earlier this year. I think it was back in February.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of responses, a lot of people saying, sounds good, but here's what I also do. It was the February 21st episode. Chris also recommended the Food Cycler by Vitamix as well.
Yeah, so we'll have a link to that episode if you want to hear some of those other recommendations. And thanks, Dewey, for bringing this back up. If you're wondering about the compost
I'm
conversation,
glad it's working for you, Dewey.
That was something we had with Allison in Good Day Internet. But I feel like these are all interesting things that folks want to know about. So thanks for sending that in. Now, regarding buying hard drives that have been refurbished, Milton in Boulder, Colorado had a cautionary tale. He bought a hard drive on Amazon that seemed suspicious. The indication that something was wrong, writes Milton, was that the drive was shipped in some kind of sled used in storage arrays. And when I plugged the drive in and looked at the smart data, I discovered that the drive had been used continuously for 3 years. Like your story said, it must have been some drive that had been recycled from an enterprise storage array after the warranty expired. Maybe Milton, or maybe someone stole it. Because here's the rest of Milton's story. He said, it was sold to me as new for $270. Maybe the drive could have run for several more years, but I wasn't going to pay that kind of money for it, so I returned the drive and got my money back. No doubt the retailer just resold it to some other unsuspecting person. Technically, the retailer did not make any false claims. They just omitted certain details.
Important details.
I don't think this means that you shouldn't recycle data center hard drives, but Milton is right that when you're out there buying hard drives from people you don't know, you might want to make sure that they're on the up and up. Now, these refurbished hard drives that Seagate sells that we were talking about yesterday, they are very clear that they are refurbished. So there's no problem there. It's like with anything, there's always going to be some bad actors no matter what you're doing. I don't think that means you shouldn't recycle the hard drives, but it's important for us to keep in mind when we're shopping for anything, right?
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, thanks to everybody who writes in. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com is where to send that feedback. And do keep it coming because you make our show better every day. Also making our show better whenever he's with us is Scott Johnson. Scott Johnson, let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
Well, today I'd just like to remind people that I have been doing since 2009 a show called Film Sack, where me and my co-hosts, two Brians and a Randy and myself, all sit around and talk about big movies from a long time ago. Sometimes they're new, sometimes they're in the middle somewhere. But it's a film podcast that has been around long enough that I think we finally figured out what we're doing. So check it out. Filmtech.com is the website. We really, really like making that show. And we got a lot of wonderful fans that would love to have you in the family. So come check it out. Filmsack.com.
Now, if you're a patron of Daily Tech News Show, you're cool. If you're not, well, you can be cool real easy. Just go to patreon.com/DTNS and stick around for the patron show. Good day, Internet. We're going to be talking about Twitch's new ad rules for streamers. They announced those on Tuesday, and the backlash was intense, I think would be a word that you could use. We'll talk to former Twitch streamer Scott Johnson about it. Stick around.
Just a reminder, we are live. You can catch our show live, and we'd love to have you live if you can join us Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 2000 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're back again doing it with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Now listen, it's not lost on me that we're talking about this story while we're streaming on Twitch.
Yeah.
Sarah, do you want to kick us off here with what's going on? Tell us a little bit about these new rules.
Okay, let's talk about the new rules. So on Tuesday, Twitch announced new advertising rules for streamers that affect things like branded deals. Basically, those are ads that the streamer conducts during the streams, not the ads rolled in by Twitch itself, stuff that is kind of outside of Twitch's control. So the new rules. Start with this. On-stream logos are limited to 3% of overall screen size. Burned-in video ads are not allowed. Burned-in display ads are not allowed. Burned-in audio ads are not allowed. So basically, no pre-recorded anything. The new rules were supposed to go into effect on July 1st, but as Tom mentioned, there's been quite a bit of backlash. So later Tuesday, Twitch was backtracking, saying, quote, "Today's branded content policy update was overly broad. This created confusion and frustration, and we apologize for that," end quote. The company says that the new rules were meant to address third-party ad networks.
Mm.
Now, whether or not that's true, I think,
I think you get
enough backlash.
Yeah.
You say, okay, hold on. Now, you know, we've upset the wrong folks.
It absolutely is true that they created these rules to address third-party ad networks. That is a real problem where people, you know, kind of hijack Twitch streams and try to run their own ads to drive up. It's a thing. It's a scheme. And Twitch is fine stopping it. I totally am fine with that. YouTube doesn't allow you to do that either. But the way they wrote these rules, the way they wrote these guidelines, had more effects. And I'm not sure if there is a good effect to that, because I think it was just sloppy, basically, is what I'm saying. I'm not sure there was a like side effect that they didn't mind if it also happened when they wrote these rules. I think they really were just trying to stop the third-party ads, because the way they wrote them would stop their top 100 most successful streamers from making 80% of their money. And if you don't really understand why that is, Twitch does a 50-50 split, takes 50% of the ad revenue that it provides. That includes subscriptions as well as ad revenue. Unless you're one of their top 100, then it might do 70-30. You might get a little better split, but they're taking a big old chunk of that revenue. So the way most Twitch streamers make bank is branded deals. They go do a direct branded deal with somebody, and then that Twitch streamer gets to keep all of it. So
yeah.
You okay, that's, Sarah?
That's, she's like, oh, I can't believe this new rule.
She's so angry about Twitch, she just walked right out of the camera.
I mean, okay, so... Okay, there's a few things going on. Part of the problem is they have been making some of these changes for a while, and they've all been controversial for the most part. A lot of them have been controversial, and they've had to dial those back too in some cases. We don't have to get into those, but this is a little bit more of that. And it also feels to me, I don't like to get conspiratorial. I don't wear a tinfoil hat most of the time in my life. But you know how politicians will fill up certain bills with, like, they call it pork, but they'll fill it up with, like, little sneaky things are trying to get through. And then by the time it goes through, it all gets dialed back, but they might get 25% of what they were asking for instead of 100. Or even a better example of this is like, I lost the example. It's a good one though. But basically I know what it was. Trey Parker and Matt Stone, famously, when they were making Team America, that puppet movie they made years and years ago.
Oh, Team America World Police. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That movie, they wanted so bad to get certain amounts of content, which he will not describe, into that movie. And to do it, they knew they had to overdo it. They had to show the studio way worse stuff and say, how's this? And they said, well, we can't do this. Well, let's dial it back.
So you think,
and then they ended up getting what they wanted.
it's like when you give a kid some choices.
Yeah.
You say, I'm gonna let you choose, knowing they hate each choice, but at least they have some control.
But they have the feeling that they're having an effect. Mm-hmm. So this whole rollback, walk back thing, I don't think people should take too much from that, because I don't think they're walking back that much.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you on that, because that is definitely a thing that that companies do. I'm not disputing that it's not possible.
Sure.
But I think they just really rushed it. I think they just were like, we need to stop third-party ads. That's a legitimate thing. The way third-party ads are coming in is audio, video, and now that we're doing display, we shouldn't let them do display either. And they just didn't think it through. And now they're trying to figure out, like, well, how do we write it so that it doesn't affect the branded deals? The folks who are just doing a thing for a client. And the problem is that's hard. That's hard to draw a line through, which is probably why they didn't draw the line very well in the first place, because it's difficult.
Yeah, and then if you're going by the letter of the law, I'm in a situation, if I was still streaming mostly over there, which I'm not, I'm almost all YouTube now, about a month and a half ago, but when I was doing it there, if I had a logo, for example, I sometimes have Doghouse Systems sponsor my streams. They built my gaming computer, and so it seemed like a nice trade. And we don't do anything crazy with it, but no. I can no longer, that has to
3%?
Be 3%. That's insane.
Like, what is 3%? That's like the size of my thumb.
If you're lucky, yeah. Right? And then also 3%, well, I guess it has to be percentage because resolutions differ, but at the end of all of that, when I read that, I just went, this is them doing partly what you're saying. They're getting ahead of themselves, or doing this too quick, or they're not thinking of all the possibilities or whatever. But what they're really not doing is working with the streamers, who are their biggest partners in this, who are the ones that generate their money no matter where it comes from. And you cannot alienate those people.
That is the bigger crime here. I forget conspiracy theories, whether they're true or not, of them like trying to manipulate things or doing things for an alternate reason. The bigger issue, crime is probably too harsh of a word, but the bigger issue is you didn't run this through your community. You didn't talk to people before you made the change. You just pushed it out there on top of everybody. Mm-hmm. And granted, maybe they wouldn't talk to the entire Twitch community, but you got partner managers for these big successful channels. Just ask them about it. Run it by them. Say like, look, we need to stop this problem. Here's what we want to do to stop it. And then those partners go like, well, wait a minute, that sounds like it's going to stop me from doing this thing. And like, oh, okay, well, now we'll go workshop it and change it. And doesn't sound like that happened, because all the top streamers are acting like this is a surprise.
Yeah, some of the top streamers are calling for their fans to boycott the service and other streamers to boycott the service. Like, that's always going to happen on the extreme end. I don't know that this constitutes that exactly, but there's a long, like I said, this is part, if this is one time, like, oh, Twitch has a new thing and it came out of nowhere, fine. But there's been the whole 70-30 down to 50-50 thing. There's the other structural rules that kind of stopped people from doing things.
Yeah, the simulcasting thing where you can only simulcast with platforms that Twitch doesn't feel are important, like TikTok.
Right. They won't let you, they're not letting you do it with Kick, which I don't know why they think that's important, because Kick is very small, but also a lot of people are going to benefit from this freak out by going to Kick. But YouTube, obviously not on that list either. So they just keep doing these things, and it just feels more and more like they're out of touch with what makes Twitch Twitch. So I realize it's never going to be as simple as gamers see it and streamers see it, but it's also never going to be as simple as this company sees it. I really hope they can right that ship. It's just weird. And for the record, I did not leave Twitch. I haven't even left Twitch, really. I just stopped using Twitch as an experiment that worked. And I went, oh, I like this better, and I'm benefiting more from it. So I'm going to hang out over here more. So just to put that out there, this isn't like, oh, now, you know, I should leave. People should do whatever they want to do.
Back or anything. Yeah.
Yeah, but do know what you're getting into, especially if you're partnered. These new rules, if you're not really looking closely at them, when they are applied, and they may not be in July, like Tom mentioned, but if they do, whenever they apply them, just make sure you look at what you're actually putting out there. You may be doing something you thought was innocent for years, and then suddenly you're against those terms. That's weird.
Mm-hmm. I'll say that as a consumer of Twitch, since I'm not really much of a streamer anymore, all the times that I tune into Twitch and I'm glued to Twitch is like, you know, for live events, like particularly the Race to World First on World of Warcraft. And those teams, all the ones all the major ones that stream on Twitch, have logos of all their sponsors plastered everywhere. And they can stream the event with the quality that they have, with the announcers and with the, you know, the different setups that they have, because those sponsors want that screen space. And if they're not going to get that screen space, a lot of those big events aren't going to be able to stream as much, which is going to take me completely away from the service, because that's the only thing I'm watching the service for at all.
The big one that's happening now that I always love every year is Games Done Quick, and it's an amazing event where it's like speedrunners and amazing records are broken every year. It's always really fun, and they do tons of that.
Yep.
How are they going to do that? Because it's in direct violation of these new terms.
And we're not looking at necessarily profit. A lot of these people are doing the sponsorships and having the logos and things like that on there.
It's charity.
In order to run the production value of it.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. You know, Games Done Quick is very well produced. Yeah. A lot of the teams for Race to World First have dedicated streaming teams with announcers and, you know, 24-hour coverage, that kind of thing. They're not going to be able to do all that. They're not going to be able to afford to have that production value and bring viewers to the platform if Twitch is going to start strong-arming them with the logos and stuff. Like, and 3%, like you said, Tom, it's not big.
It's
like,
really small.
It's a little bit larger than the identifications that we use on our StreamYard. Like the Scott Johnson there is probably 2% or something like that. So now ICU has a good question. What about an Under Armour logo on a hat? The terms did make it clear that you can have things on set in view, and that's fine, because again, this is what makes me think they really were just trying to stop third-party ad streamers from hijacking streams. And so, but of course, because they allow that, there are a lot of jokes of people like, well, I guess I'll just be filling up my background with Logitech stuff since they sponsor me, or whoever it was that sponsored them.
I'm going to find out what I bet you ChatGPT has the answer to this. To calculate 3% of a 1080 display, you need to determine 3% of the total overall pixels. So it says 3% of a 1080 display is approximately 62,208 pixels, which is 0.003 of the total screen.
I was just making a guess, because, like, Scott, you right now with four of us up, you're 25% of the stream. Half of that's 12, half of that is six, and then half of that's three, roughly.
That's totally, totally fair way of doing it. Also, I the person who's making the reference about the hat, I wear those Under Armour hats constantly. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't even considered it. It's the only hat that fits my stupid
head. Yeah, but you're not getting paid for it, so that won't matter.
No, I don't get paid at all.
Even if you were getting paid, that would be allowed. Like, you would, you'd have to disclose it.
But I assume so, I assume I should be able to wear whatever I want.
It made a point of saying, like, you can have things in the shot. As long as it's not burned in. Everything was burned in, which meant, like, streaming it through. Jahandar was asking, like, what is hijacking a stream? That would be just creating a Twitch stream and then selling third-party ads into it. Like trying to artificially jack up a bunch of subscriptions and then run a bunch of third-party ads in there that Twitch would not get any money from.
Yeah, and you can run a burn-in ad. A good example would be as if I was doing a stream and I had a 30-second spot from Doghouse, a 1080p overlay spot that I would run. And they're not, you know, Twitch isn't running that. I'm running that from me. That's what they don't want.
And
they don't want that anymore.
That should be okay if Doghouse Systems is your sponsor and you're just taking a moment to thank them. It should not be okay if, like, your entire Twitch stream is built on running basically what Twitch would run without having to give Twitch the money.
And it's a little bit like having a booth at the fair and then hire, and then now everyone comes to you to get reduced rate booth space at the fair. It's not like Tom's original point was it is
subletting Twitch streams.
It kind of is what you're doing.
Right.
And I get why they don't want that. YouTube doesn't want that. Nobody wants that. Yeah. Right. Like, I get that. It's just, I just feel like they put it in place once again without thinking very hard about immediate impact, how streamers are either going to translate this or see this, or how their fans are going to react. It's just bad.
We have multi-minute videos that we play every year for the Streamathon when streamers need to take a break or whatever else that are all branded content towards the charity, of course. But I can see, you know, we do it all for charity, but even if you're just doing a long stream, if you're doing a long speed run or something like that, or a endurance run, and you just need to take a break and you want to throw a little ad in there or whatever. Like, this just seems to bring up so many problems.
Yeah. There needs to be a better line for
the viewer and the streamer
to say,
and that, yeah,
we're not going to limit the technology you can use to handle your sponsorship unless we feel like you're trying to get away from using our own ad system. Right. But that's the line they're trying to walk.
Yeah, it seems like as Twitch itself said, like, okay, these new terms of service, a little too broad. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-hmm. We didn't mean to upset everybody on this level. We just sort of hoped you'd say, okay. And no, that's not when you're talking about making money off of your livelihood. You're always going to make people upset about this sort of stuff. But in this case, yeah, it was a little too overreaching.
The other thing that upsets streamers is bot accounts, spammers, and other stuff still a huge problem. Like, they feel like, even though that's not a financial priority, streamers have felt like, well, the quality of my time here is not great because you're not fixing those things. You're jumping straight ahead to profit-based things. And yeah, they're a company and they need to maintain whatever. And they're under the umbrella of Amazon, and Amazon wants it to perform and all of that. So they got to do what they got to do. But just compounds that feeling of like, well, you're stepping right over the big cultural issues here and straight to profit issues that will only exacerbate these cultural issues. So I don't know. I don't know how they win here, honestly. I don't know how Twitch, even if Twitch thought it out more, a lot of this was still going to land bad. And yeah, I don't know how you solve that.
I feel like the reaction is almost as indicative of how badly Twitch has let relations with its streamers get than it is how poorly thought out the rules are. Because you don't see a lot of Twitch streamers going, hey, look, I know what you meant, but can we clarify these and tighten them up? It's more like, I'm quitting. I'm going, this was the push I needed, right? Yeah. And it's the remarks like, this is the push I needed, that make me go, oh, this isn't the first thing they did that caused people to be upset.
When I first saw it, I said on Twitter kind of flippantly, I said, does Twitch even want streamers? And I was just kidding, really. But a ton of people replied and said, no, they just want money. And that is such a diametrically opposed set of concepts. There's no Twitch without the streamers. And without the streamers, there's no Twitch. Like, you can, these two things have to be part of the deal. Like, even YouTube could say one day, no more live streams, we're done. We're just going to do YouTube from now on. Like we always have before, it's just back to that. And they would survive. Mm-hmm. Twitch doesn't have that. Twitch has this thing. They stream and that's it. So if they want that to continue to be growth, they have to have a better relationship with these people. I just don't know how else to tell them that. It's just, you just have to. There's nothing else to do. There is no other relationship to cater to.
You know? Blame Amazon.
I guess so.
I wonder how much of this is like a trickle-down Amazon cost-cutting, because Amazon's definitely cracking down on costs. The cost here would be bandwidth.
Yeah, I mean, I'm half kidding, but it may have been something where, you know, you know, when you think about the parent company and saying like, all right, you know, we can't have this anymore. So here are the new rules. And they go, all right. And you got to roll them out by Monday. Okay. And now everybody's rioting. Oh, well, okay. Now we have to think about optics and, you know, PR walkbacks and stuff like that. It seems not well thought out, but it would not be the first company to make a mistake like this.
If you think about it, this is a scenario. I'm not saying I have any idea that this is how it worked, but a scenario could be Amazon says, hey, you're spending this much on bandwidth. This many of your accounts don't have monetization on. So you need to come up with a way to reduce those accounts, right? Those are the accounts that don't make us any money. They have virtually no subscribers and they don't have monetization on. So you got to reduce that. And so Twitch looks at that and goes, oh, well, it would be bad relations to just shut people off if they don't turn on monetization or force them to have monetization on. We're not going to do that. But a lot of these accounts are just spammers. They're just people who are making money by running third-party ads and not turning our monetization on. And we can go after them. I could see that as a scenario to get us to where we are now. And then they're like, well, let's change our policy to crack down on that so we can shut them down. And then that'll save us the cost.
Yeah, it also makes me... So there's a whole other conversation I've been seeing about whether Amazon values the potential or the impact of Twitch, not just its current bottom line or projections, but what it is as an entity online. Mm-hmm. The way that Google seemed to have done with YouTube. They saw the potential. They lost a lot of money in the beginning, but they made money very quickly.
They found a way definitely to do it. Angered their creators along the way too.
Oh, all the time.
They're not all innocent. The time.
They're definitely not immune to this at all. But whether or not the institution known as Twitch matters versus the immediate financial, you know, future of them matters. And I don't know the answer to that, except that Amazon could afford to lose a little to gain a little, you know. They don't need to be. We don't know if they're even doing that. But if they are strong arming this a little bit, then I think that's probably a mistake, because it's not the kind of thing where it's like buy it and make money immediately, unless they think of it that way. The way I see it is like Twitch is an institution, or it should be and could be. So treat it like an institution, and then find a way to make it fit. And if that way is to piss off the only people that make you money, then I don't think you're doing it right.
So David Grizzly Smith says, could they say if you don't have monetization on, then these rules apply? I don't know. That might cut down on a lot of the issues. I think they also want to make sure that people aren't double dipping. So maybe that's the reason they want it to apply to everybody. But yeah, that's an interesting question. And then Lion Jim Video says, if each host and co-host has a printed version of a logo in the background, it can take up more than 3%. Yeah. They are definitely not trying to stop streamers from having branded things in their stream. They're just trying to stop the stuff that's replicative of what Twitch sells itself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it goes from here, but I do expect you're going to hear them come back soon with more. It won't take long to hear what the walk back plan is. I don't think it'll take that long anyway.
Well, they got till July 1st. That's when the new rules are supposed to go into effect.
So. Yeah. Everyone broadcast your giant logos while you can before the 3% rule kicks in.
Here. It's just a coffee mug. Not.
Yeah, that's all it is. Mm. Look at that logo. Oh, it moves and everything. It's 3D.
Yeah. Whoa. It's not video, though. It's on my set. Yeah.
Runs on Proton.
Yeah, and all the people coming up with ways to get around the rules. I don't think Twitch minds if you get around the rules by having things in your set. They aren't trying to hurt sponsorships or branded sponsorships. So they're just not very good at writing their guidelines.
They're pretty bad at it. They've also been a little bit weird about how they enforce. So for the longest time, like I had a friend, my friend Kyle, who does a lot of cool content, Kyle Ferguson, him and his wife used to do a stream for Heroes of the Storm, and they do it every day on Twitch. And one day, to coincide with the summer event that the game was doing, they decided to do it with beach balls and swimsuits and just go like all summer beach time.
Sure.
And it was nothing Sounds lascivious fun. Or weird. It was fun. It was super wholesome and fun-hearted. They got banned for a month for that.
Banned for a month?
Yeah. They had First rules offense. About... They had rules about no bikinis, no this, no that, right?
And he so was they were all a mad bikini, about it. So, okay. I
get but it. Then during, not long after that, with the same rule set, I forgot her name, but the really popular, the girl that's just in a hot tub the whole time. I don't know her name. Again, they. Oh, yeah. She's just in a hot tub all the familiar. Time.
Yeah.
Redhead, somebody.
She streams and sits in a hot tub. Yeah.
Amaranth. Anyway, whatever it is. She was being let to do that just with free... you know, with no ramifications. And it was obvious why. I mean, there's no other reason to say this because she was breaking the rule and then some, but she was bringing in hundreds of thousands of views per stream. And Kyle was bringing in 300-400 per stream. So they were applying rules very differently depending on power and influence. And nobody likes that, especially for a site that's supposed to be kind of rebellious. You know, it's Twitch, yeah. man.
Where also, we what's the games. Benefit of applying the rules to the small channels?
Like none.
There's no benefit for anybody there because it's not a big enough channel for you to get the PR, bump of like, we stopped these people. So why even do it? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
It was really annoying when that happened. And we were like stumped because we just, well, there's no other answer. There's no other answer other than they're applying the rules differently depending on your level of exposure.
Or there's different people applying the rules. That happens. I see that at Apple a lot. Where you get an app rejected, like none of the other apps like this get rejected. It's like, yeah, there's not just one person. And so maybe the partner manager for the hot tub lady is like, well, you're skating on the line, but it's okay. And this other person whose job is just to go through the small channel is like, nope, ban. I had a bad day today. I'm not feeling charitable. Yeah,
forget it. Which is part, but you've just described part of the problem. Like the overall problem is you're going to have that unevenness unless you've got a company structure / culture / workflow that just applies the rules the same. And they got to fix that.
Whenever you have humans involved, rules never get applied 100% the same. And then when you've got the number, the scale of issues that something like Twitch has, you're going to have more examples like that.
Yep. Let's get AI doing it. You were in hot tub too long.
AI will never make a mistake.
No, it'll never be a problem ever. It'll only be positive and perfect. From now on, count that as your word.
Like a common theme in a lot of discussions these days is people expecting perfection and living in the real world where things are not perfect.
Yep.
Well, I always expect perfection from our patrons and get it. That's just the way it goes.
That's so nice.
There's only one way not to be a perfect patron, and that's to not be a patron, right? But you can fix that. Patreon.com/DTNS. So
the only bad patron is the patron you don't have.
Yeah. Right. There's no such thing as a bad patron, just somebody who hasn't become a patron yet. That's what Will Rogers used to say.
Right.
Wow, he was really ahead of his time.
People wondered what he was talking about. Like, you mean like... thanks to everybody who supports us at patreon.com/DTNS. And despite our long conversation just now, thanks to everybody who supports us on Twitch. That's where we stream. Norm Fizikas resubscribed with Prime for the 40th month. Congrats to me, said Norm. Well, you don't need me to congrats you, but I've got it anyway. Congrats, Norm. Thank you. The OG Mudman subscribed with Prime an hour ago. Welcome, OG Mudman. Ganja Doctor at Tier 1 for the 8th month said, give it to Mikey. He'll eat anything. We got Pogo Karza giving us a follow. Bits from Techno mentioned Zoe Brings Bacon. And resubscribe from Kowalow 1979 for the 36th month. And David Grizzly Smith at Tier 1 for the 28th month. Thank you, David Grizzly Smith. That is going to do it for us. Scott Johnson, what are you off to do today?
Oh, I got Play Retro coming up. We talk about old video games. It's going to be great. Forget about new stuff. Let's talk about old stuff.
Retro. Well, folks, until tomorrow, everyone, please have a good day.
Until tomorrow, Internet. Have a good one.
Good day.
Good day, Internet.